You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. It is episode number 19. It is February the 12th of 2012. Whoa, it's 2-12, 2012. Didn't even realize that. My name is Willie Dills, and I'm a huge Giants fan, and I'm joined by two other huge Giants fans. We'll start with Mr. Chad King. Chad, welcome to the show.
I might start golfing left-handed.
Yeah?
I'm just saying, that guy, man, he just is on fire right now.
That's not a bad way to go. Do it.
I might actually golf better left-handed, by the way, even though I'm a righty.
There's probably a lot of people in the world where it wouldn't really matter which way they go. You know what I mean?
No.
I'm pretty sure I could probably golf with my feet, and I do just as well. So.
Blindfolded, without a club, whatever. It's the same.
Yeah, it's not a handicap. I play the same way.
This is just how I play. That voice you hear, the sexy dulcet tones of Ben Lee. Welcome, Ben Lee, to the show.
I, too, am a huge Giants fan, but I'm trying to lose weight.
Okay. Are you on the Tim Lincecum, just eat one less double-double every day, and that's how you lose weight?
I'm on the I don't have any money to buy food diet. It works out really well.
That does work well. You know what? I'm actually, right now, me and Tim Lincecum are both trying to get down to he's down to 175. I'm trying to get down to 170. Ooh. And I've been actually counting calories. The first time in my life I've ever tried to diet, period.
And so do you do it better when you count with your left hand?
Well, clearly. what I've got is I've got like a little app going, and everything I eat throughout the day, I keep track of in there. And my goal is apparently, according to this app, to come in under 1,700 calories a day.
You know what's really good about those apps that I found very valuable is that they actually end up being a time capsule, because I use them for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then – about a year and a half later, I go back to it. I go, what did I eat on this day?
What did I eat 1 year ago?
Yeah.
For 3 weeks.
That's kind of nice.
And then give up on completely. I've actually been doing pretty well. I've been doing it for about a month now, and I have actually lost weight, but I've also been going to the gym. So
that's good.
It's not just cutting back. You got to do both, really, I think. And the thing is, like, for Tim Lincecum, you know, he's young and he's already small. And every single guy in the world, and you guys, I'm sure, will say that you've done this too. Every single guy in the world at the age of like 22, every skinny guy says, man, I could just eat anything I want. I don't know about you guys, but I could just eat anything and it's fine. And then we realize in about 5 or 6 years that, that's because I was 22. I see now. Okay. I thought I was just some special weird freak that could eat whatever I want.
Stupid age.
Yeah. So now I'm at the age of 32. And things are a little different. I got to actually, you know, I'm trying to get back to my playing weight is what I'm trying to say.
One of my favorites, though, is there's an app called The Eatery where you literally take a photo of whatever it is that you're eating and then you put it up on the app, and then other people rate how healthy they think it is on a scale of 1 to 10.
So
whatever you eat, you just feel really self-conscious about it. So it's like, I can just imagine Timmy sitting down. He's like, all right, let me take a photo of this. And his line is just like
three
seven
double doubles, two of orders like, of fries and a chocolate milkshake. What do you think of that, guys?
Somebody used to start one.
Not as bad as a bucket of lard.
One person is like eight. And then somebody at one.
Have you guys tried to do the Tim Lincecum challenge? Have either of you tried to do it?
No.
Eat three double doubles, two orders of fries, and a chocolate shake.
I think I just gained weight listening to that, so no.
I did try a 4x4 one time, but that doesn't still equate to what Lincecum eats.
Yeah, he's basically a 6x6 plus two buns.
I have enough trouble with a 1x1, so I'm going to have to take a pass.
I did it with another person.
I mean, I always
get
fries with it, but the fact remains.
I did it with another person, and it was like more than enough food for two people. Way, way more than, like, both of us were like, no, that was not good. We should never do that again.
I think that he just likes to eat so much because of his other recreational activity.
That's very possible. At the end of FanFest, I actually was standing at the bathrooms waiting to leave, and a bunch of people just chucked down a whole bunch of Tim Weedicum posters. So we started grabbing them, and then some Giants employees came out and took them away. They're like, we don't really want to condone this. We would rather just get rid of this.
Probably not supposed to be at a sanctioned Giants event.
Yeah,
probably not.
We're just going to put that out there.
I wish the Giants would just embrace it, you know, just be cool with it.
There's really no good way to embrace it. It's sort of like if it doesn't show up in the stadium during an event, you just kind of go, well, hey, you got 20 people walking around with Let Timmy Smoke shirts. Meh, that's cool. We're not going to kick you out of the stadium or anything.
That's right.
At this point, it's like you can't stem the tide of the fact that, I mean, we've got Tim Lincecum, we've got the Rangers reporter complaining of smelling weed smoke while he's standing in AT&T Park or near AT&T Park.
Is that a reporter or a player?
No, that was a reporter. You don't remember that? Well, then there was also
Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, so. Josh Hamilton did the same thing where he was saying that he's standing in the outfield. He could smell the weed permeating through the outfield. But I got to say, standing on the field at FanFest, I could smell the weed permeating there as well. It was
very effervescent.
Yeah, we'll be talking about FanFest a little bit later in the show for sure. Me and Chad were both there. Ben, you were working that day, right?
I was working on a thing in the marina, and unfortunately there were no good Pat Burrell sightings. So I was a little disappointed. I was also on a steamboat the entire day, so that was kind of cool.
That sounds cool.
As long as I didn't, you know, look out the window for too long.
Can we just real quick have a little moment for Pat Burrell, because he's officially retired now, and you know, we all kind of loved the guy in our own way, not the same way that the ladies in the marina loved him, but you know, he was a pivotal part of our team in 2010, and I'll never forget the home run he hit. It was a San Diego that hit like the top of the roof of the building down the left field line.
Crashed one into the Western Metal Supply Company.
Unbelievable, that shot. That was, you know, signature Pat Burrell, just that uppercut swing and the soaring fly ball. It looked like there's just no way. It's kind of like the Major League when they're watching the game and the guy hits the ball and he goes, oh no, too high. It can't go out. That's too high. And it was like that moment where you're like, that's a pop-up. How did that pop-up just go out of the ballpark? But yeah, we'll miss Pat Burrell. He's, you know, Pat the Bat was fantastic. One of my favorite Twitter people that I follow, that we follow as TortureCast as well, is Love for Pat the Bat.
Yeah, so, Love for Pat the Bat.
Exactly. Yeah, follow at Love for Pat the Bat, because she's awesome.
As long as you don't mind, you know, prodigious Ben Roethlisberger references, but
that's true.
Erin's pretty awesome, so I'll put up with it.
I kind of get behind everything she tweets, though. I got to be honest.
He went to my high school, and I wish that would buy me a pass to go out on the town with him for a night, just to, you know, experience Pat's nightlife.
What that might be like.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
Chad, we'd never see you again.
Exactly.
Probably not.
A man can dream.
You might never be heard from again.
I would also like to give a shout out to a fan of some of my podcasts named Joshua Decker. I don't want to blow up his spot too much, but he sent me two autographed cards of Gaylord Perry.
That
he actually got himself just specifically for me, like got the cards autographed and sent them to me, which is really cool. And they're proudly displayed in my room right now. Gaylord Perry was just fantastic Giant spitballer, ultimate spitballer, totally got in trouble all the time for doctoring the ball, but like one of the classic San Francisco Giants. So.
I have a photo of me somewhere with Gaylord Perry, and that's probably one of my favorites. The dude just looks so happy all the time.
he really is.
This was in the middle of the All-Star Fan Fest at the All-Star game, and I'm like, you're surrounded by people at your table. How are you so jolly right now? Or maybe how are you not, I guess, might have been a better question.
The guy lives
surrounded by people that are paying for your autograph. Yeah, it's not a bad deal.
He got away with it for years. He got busted, but he also got away with it for years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
I can report that the ball that he signed for me was not, in fact, covered with any foreign substances.
There wasn't any spit hanging
like
off of it.
No, it was just pen ink. I want to say I checked, but I really didn't want to check, so I'm pretty sure.
That would be awesome if he just signed a ball and then also rubbed a bunch of Vaseline on it at the same time and said, here you go. All right, let's talk about the Giants. Let's talk real quick about Bruce Bochy's plans for Buster Posey, which I actually listened to this interview as well. Chad, you posted this in the show notes, and I thought this was really interesting, that his plan was to play Buster 5 days a week at catcher, 1 day at first base, and give him a day off. Now, in 2010, we rode him hard. We rode him hard down the stretch. I mean, he was in the game, in the lineup every single day. And as a catcher, that's really tough to do, even as a young guy. I feel like it's good that Bruce Bochy is at least considering the fact that if we're going to have this guy be a part of the lineup and be, you know, a consistent threat throughout the season, we got to manage him early and manage him in a way that doesn't tire him out. So I was really glad to hear him address that. What are your thoughts, Chad, on how we should be treating Buster? Does this sound about right?
I think it sounds about right. I know a lot of people last year after the injury, I mean, I think it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction. We're automatically saying, all right, next year you got to play him exclusively at first base. You got to preserve this guy. You know, but you heard the same talk about Piazza early in his career.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did eventually move to first base, but he still played majority of his career at catcher. And, you know, yeah, he got hurt on a freak play. That could happen at first base, too. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily going to protect him more at first base, but secondarily, you have a log jam at first base with Huff and
Brandon Belt.
And Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and Pill, too, yeah. For that matter, which we'll talk about later. So you don't really have the option of playing him there 3 or 4 days a week. So he's 24 years old. He has plenty of time to recover. I think spring training is going to be a huge indication, and that's one thing that Bruce Bochy was talking about, is that he really needs to assess his health and how he's recovering. And I think it's a lot of the mental confidence that he's going to have, because a lot of these athletes, you know, and I think a lot of us can attest to this, after you have a significant injury, even physically, if you're fine and you're recovering, it's still a bit of a mental aspect. He's got a squat, he's got a catch, and it's game speed. And some interviews with Buster Posey, that's what he mentioned. He said, yeah, I can squat, I can catch, I can run, I can throw, I can hit. But I don't know how it's going to be until I'm tested at game speed.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be until spring training. So I think that's when, you know, they're going to get the full assessment of his recovery and how much he can actually handle at the catcher position.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think honestly, there's no possibility of trying to jam him into first base right now. And I think you're right about that. There's just too many guys there competing for that spot. And Buster Posey himself says this. He wants to be a catcher. He mm-hmm. wants to remain behind the plate. And if that's what he wants to do, you know, don't force him to not be in a position he wants to. Like that, I think, mentally can be damaging to Buster Posey. I mean, he's got a good head on his shoulders. I don't think that it would necessarily take him completely out of the game, but I think, you know, mentally, this is where he wants to be. This is where he thrives. And I think, you know, defensively also, he's such a boost for us there that to take him out of that position is doing a disservice to the team. So to handle him a little bit better and give him the time off early on in the year so that towards the end of the season he's not so tired out, I think is really the way to go. And all the people who said, oh, put him at first base, you made a really good point where you can get injured anywhere on the field. So this doesn't necessarily mean that, while the chances might be lower, this doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to completely protect him if you do that.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things with Posey is you got to take advantage of the fact he's got a lot of leadership, even as a young guy. There's a lot of people in that clubhouse that really look up to, you know, what he knows, what he does. And at catcher, you really take a lot more advantage of that. Yeah, he's got some really good game calling abilities. He can read guys on the other team well. He can read his own pitchers really well. And you kind of got to ride something like that as much as you can. Obviously, you want to give him some time off. But the fact remains that if it gets into a point where we're coming down the stretch and we're, you know, neck and neck with Arizona, there's nothing that says they can't change their mind later. This seems like the ideal way to start out the season, though, to keep Posey fresh, to keep his legs a little bit fresher, especially as he's getting back into the swing of things and getting back used to game time conditioning. That's a good way to make sure that we don't wreck Posey early in the season, and that if we have to ride him harder at the end of the season, then we're in a position to do that.
Yeah, and he'll be prepared for that. I also think that you have to think about how big of a step up is he from, say, Huff or Brandon Belt, and how big of a step up is he from Eli Whiteside or, you know, Hector Sanchez?
Definitely.
You know what I mean? It's like he's so much better than those guys that you really give the most benefit to your starting nine by putting him behind the plate. When you put him at first base, you're taking a bat that's really not much worse than his out of the lineup, you know, as good as he is. And you look at his numbers compared to, you know, the top first baseman in the league, he's not necessarily you know, the top of the top in that category. But you look at him compared to all the other catchers, he's definitely clearly one of the elite catchers as far as a hitter goes. So, you know, it's, you got to look at it in a lot of different ways. You can't just say, oh, this guy's a pure star, protect him in any way you can. You got to look at it and say, well, I got to put nine guys on the field. So well, where does this guy fit?
That's the thing about Posey's value, though. It's Posey and Maurer are both guys that it's like, you know, if you move into first base, their value decreases a lot because Absolutely. Of their ability at catcher.
And we've talked about this on the show before, too, that, mm-hmm. that you know, these guys, you got to look compared to the other first baseman. You know, he's not Fielder. He's not Prince Fielder. You know, he's Buster Posey. And unless he like suddenly hits 45 home runs and drives in 120, he's really not he's not a first baseman type offensive output.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's move on a little bit and talk about the lineup some more. Bochy has stated that he's really not sure what the lineup's going to be yet. And I, you know, I have my ideas about what the lineup should be. Obviously, mine doesn't matter, but Bruce Bochy's does. But he has expressed concern about, you know, packaging a whole bunch of lefties all towards the bottom of the lineup. You're talking about, you know, Crawford, Belt, Huff. These are the guys that'll probably be a little bit lower in the lineup, especially, I mean, Huff can probably play his way to being like the fifth guy. We'll see after spring training, but Brett Pill, as a righty off the bench, could maybe shore things up a little bit as far as, you know, switching back and forth towards the bottom of the lineup. Do you guys have like a lineup in your heads that you think is in place?
Yeah, I do. So I think it's pretty obvious that Pagan's going to be first.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a solid shot.
He's pretty much a prototypical leadoff guy. We don't have anybody else who fits that right.
No, we got rid of Torres for him. So that's what it is. Second, Freddie Sanchez. That's where he's built for. That's where he's always going to be. As long as he's healthy, of course.
Absolutely.
So let's just assume everybody's healthy. That's, of course, the caveat.
Naturally.
Here.
This is before spring training. Everyone is healthy.
Exactly. Panda third.
Yep.
Buster fourth, because that's where he was in 2010 and 2011. So I don't know why that would change.
No, I agree with
okay.
that.
Okay. Then we got Cabrera at fifth. He showed some pop, and I think that's going to be his natural position. Obviously, this is one, I guess, spot of flexibility that could occur.
Yeah, this...
I would say, you know, a Huff or a Belt or something like that.
So we got a couple guys that can flip between fifth, sixth, and seventh. I mean,
exactly.
We got some guys that are all sort of around roughly the same level, and their strengths kind of come and go depending on like who they're facing. So, I mean, if Huff sees a lot of splits again next year, he may play fifth against some guys, seventh against other guys, too. We may see that.
No, I agree.
Huff's been at fifth so many times, so that's absolutely true. The case.
And Bochy has a history of not changing his mind, so that they keep Huff in fifth.
I think top four are solid, but, yeah, then it starts to get a little bit fuzzy there. But I would say right now Cabrera would be fifth. And then, you know, sixth, seventh, and eighth is going to be kind of the Belt, Huff, Sheerholtz kind of thing. Although I just mentioned four outfielders.
That's true. I think everybody knows Crawford. Brandon Crawford is
Brandon Crawford's your eight hitter, and probably you'll see whoever plays at shortstop, where that's going to move around a lot. You know, we're gonna see Terrio in there. We're gonna see a lot of guys moving in and out of those six, seven, and eight spots for sure. I mean, that's gonna be like the place where Bruce Bochy, you know, is going to be making his moves depending on what the matchups are, who's hot right now, and things like that. So, but I agree with the 1-5 for sure. I think that's your best starting 1-5 consistently.
Well, and I think we haven't pointed out either that the upside of Posey playing first base one day a week is that Aubrey Huff, potentially, assuming that they jerk Belt into the outfield, which is likely to happen. Nobody knows where Brandon Belt's going to end up, but assuming that Huff plays first, which is usually a safe assumption, that gives him a day off. And we saw, you know, the last couple of years, Huff really needs that one day off a week. If we can get it for him, it'll keep him a lot fresher, too. And he gets, you know, he's a trooper, but he gets worn down.
Yeah, no, his legs especially. That's kind of where he tired out towards the end of 2010 as well. I mean, he said, like, my legs are barking, you know, like I'm out there every single day right now, and I'm an old man, and he needs that time off. I think
it'll
be good.
We're hoping for a lot more inside the park home runs. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. We thought we were going to get one of those a week, you know. But yeah, I agree with 1-5. I think Panda needs to be at 3 for a lot of different reasons. I really like Panda at 3 because not only is he just a guy where, let's say the first two guys make outs, right? Let's just say that that's what happens. Panda's a guy that can kind of change an inning on his own with two outs. You know what I mean? Just because he's such a free swinger and he can hit any ball. But he's going to get more pitches with a stronger hitter behind him. Because he can hit the ball in the dirt. He can. But he really drives the ball when it's, you know, belt high. And, you know, he needs to have a solid hitter behind him. So if you stick him at five, I think he struggles, you know. And I think as far as, like, how his game works and how he is at the plate, he needs to have the best protection behind him to really be the Panda that we want, you know. And
he's got to get stuff to hit.
Yeah.
I really think that he looks nothing like Will Clark.
No, it's true.
But statistically, I think he really does fit that mold. And Clark was a number three hitter because he has a pretty high average. I mean, he hits around 300, 310. So, you know, he's got a high on base percentage for that number four hitter. But at the same time, he has a threat power or power threat.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. You know, like you said, first inning, first two guys go down. He could pop one. Mm-hmm. Boom. You're up 1-0. Or he's a high average guy. He doesn't take a ton of walks. He's a free swinger, but he's a high average guy.
But he gets a lot of singles, you know.
Yeah,
he
slaps one to left field, and he's up there for Buster Posey. Mm-hmm. So I really do think that is the only logical spot for him. I can't imagine him, you know. He's going to hit a few games, of course, at fifth and all that. That always happens. But for the core of the season, it's got to be number three.
Yeah, it makes way more sense.
And it's the same thing, though. Will had guys like Kevin Mitchell behind him, too. So, I mean, you know, he had some really solid guys around him in the lineup, and that was part of the reason he got stuff to hit more often. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with Pablo, is you got to be in a position to say, well, okay, you can walk him if you want, but then now we've got Posey who can, you know, rope a double, and then we've got Huff behind him who can, you know, knock one into the field. And as opposed to, you know, like we were saying, dropping him at fifth and saying, okay, well, now you've got Brandon Crawford coming up, and that's a real threat, let me tell you.
Yeah. You know,
you just watch out there.
When you mention Will Clark, I can't get out of my head the hit that Will Clark got against, what was it, Mitch Williams, I think it
Mitch
was.
Mitch Williams, 89 NLCS in Chicago.
Against the Cubs.
Or actually, against the Cubs at
Kansas. And it was that slicing. It was that slicing single up the middle, you know, and it was I see Pablo do that so much, you know, that straight back up the middle, but with that slicing action on it. And when you mention that, it's like, to me, I see a lot of similarities in how they actually make contact with the ball, even though their swings are not at all the same. Just the type of action and the type of contact they make is very similar. I mean, that's just loud contact at all parts of the strike zone. So I think that's a really good comparison. Let's talk about the backup catcher spot, because this is an interesting thing as well. If Posey is the starting catcher, which, you know, Bochy has pointed that that's how it's going to be, we've got three guys behind him potentially, and we're probably going to start the season with at least, you know, two of them, because generally you want three catchers on your team in case you have to replace one and then someone gets injured. So Whiteside and Stewart still around. And then, of course, there's Hector Sanchez kind of making noise at the minor league and the Venezuelan leagues and everything, looking like a real strong potential to have, you know, a spot in the lineup or a spot on the team anyway. Who do you guys prefer back there? Is there somebody that you guys think is the number one pick? Or do you think that this is one of those things where throughout the season we're going to see a lot of movement?
I'm personally, I got to go with Stewart as a choice for a backup catcher. I feel like he fits the mold well. He's, you know, he's got a very strong defensive ability that he's shown, especially with some more resting time and not playing every day like he gradually moved into towards the end of last year. I feel like he's going to get exposed less often, and he's definitely going to be able to. I mean, the thing with Stewart is the inability to hit. So if you're combining him with Crawford at the same time, that's rough. But I feel like with the position that the Giants are in and the number of catchers they have, I think Stewart is most likely his backup catcher. Whiteside's on a minor league contract, so he's probably on the he or Sanchez stays on the 40-man as a backup, probably held in AAA. Sanchez probably starts in AAA to get the maximum amount of time, so they're not having him sit on the bench all the time. That's my thought.
Okay. Chad, what do you think?
I think Sanchez is going to be the eventual backup, but not to start the season.
In a Pablo kind of way, the like comes up later sort of maneuver?
Yeah, I really do. I think he definitely has potential, but you know, he's kind of got a logjam ahead of him. I do think that Whiteside is going to be the guy that's going to be the backup as opposed to Stewart. It's not because I like his sexy gray hair or anything like that.
Dude, is tall.
Ironic that his name is Whiteside, but I do think that he has a little bit more experience than Stewart and a little more pop. Granted, I think Stewart's a little bit better of a defensive catcher, but they both can't really hit a lick.
Yeah.
But Whiteside does have a little bit more pop.
No,
so
that's true.
I do think they might keep him on just for that reason, just for a late inning replacement, a pinch hitting, whatever it may be. But, you know, their options aren't really thick right here. After Posey went down last year, whoever was in the catcher position, which was pretty much those two guys, they hit, what, 224 for the rest of the season. So you're not getting a whole lot here.
No, there's very little production out of the catcher.
It's really a flip of the coin. So it's not like if Bochy took Stewart, I'd be like, oh God, you gotta go with Whiteside. Yeah. That's it. You're gonna lose the playoffs. There's no way you're gonna win the playoffs.
How could you do that? Yeah.
I totally agree. I'm a little bit biased towards Hector Sanchez because I just really liked watching him play when he did come up for a little bit last year. I don't know.
Who's another rookie of the year?
I love the young guys. I got to admit, and both Whiteside and Stewart are kind of on in years a little bit as far as backups. Like this is pretty much their role for the remainder of their careers. And I think Sanchez does have the ability to at some point step into being a starting catcher for somebody.
Isn't that awesome though? We have this podcast with three guys, and we picked all three different guys.
It's true.
One of us is going to be right.
One of us will be right. We'll get to say nah the whole rest of the season.
My problem always used to be that when it was me and Willie and Mike, we'd all kind of tend to agree on everything. And so we'd be sitting there for a while, and I'd be looking for something to disagree with Willie with. Like, come on. I don't think that.
Yeah.
Such a contentious
issue. Doesn't happen often enough.
The backup catcher. This is going to change. If they choose Sanchez, we're winning it all. If they choose Whiteside or Stewart, we're not even making the playoffs, guys. I hope you know that.
Write that down while you win it all.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Ben, I disagree.
Ben, you wanted to give some happy birthdays to some people, didn't you?
Couple of happy birthdays. This is something that we did when we first started the podcast. I kind of wanted to bring it back. I got a couple here since it's been 2 weeks since our last podcast. Sorry, everybody.
Super Bowl. Super Bowl, yes. Man.
Super Bowl, and I was still working on the same show, so I was nowhere near my house and computer, and yeah. I'm going to pretend like that's a good reason, and it wasn't totally just like
sure.
Super Bowl.
It makes a lot of sense.
Sure, yeah. So, first off, our dearly departed Andres Torres had a birthday on the 26th, as well as 2010 run-up guy Brandon Metters.
Brandon Metters. Wow.
Brandon Metters.
That guy had some sick movement on some of his pitches, though.
Same birthday as Andres Torres and everything. Funny how that turned out.
They probably partied together. They probably went to some Latin club, and Torres wore his douchiest shirt.
Sunglasses and all.
Yeah.
A couple of fist pumps.
Metro jeans.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of throwbacks, on the 28th, it was actually the birthday of one Tsuyoshi Shinjo.
Yeah.
Oh, the flipping, jumping outfielder, center fielder.
Is he even playing baseball?
I doubt it. I don't think
Shinjo's playing baseball anymore. I don't think. Yeah. I remember I used to love that guy just because I was like looking at my television screen. I was like, hey, an Asian.
Well, he used to do the crazy jump whenever he would catch the ball, too. Like, he wouldn't have to jump, but he would. So I don't know. I always thought that was funny. I'd be like, yeah, it was a routine fly ball, and yet he leaped into the air and, you know, caught it over his head. I don't know why he did that, but I dig it. And then he was, wasn't he like our leadoff hitter for a long time? Like for at least a year, we just plugged him into the leadoff spot over and over and over again. And he was, he hit 210. Yeah, he hit like 210 that entire season. But everybody just liked him anyway. Yeah, I miss that guy though.
He went back to Japan after a while, I think, for a bit. And I think that he's still there now doing baseball-related stuff. I don't believe he's still playing, although I don't know that.
Yeah,
so I could be totally wrong. On the 29th, we've got Lance Niekro. So
for
those of you who briefly remember the Lance Niekro
project. So I actually looked him up earlier this week because
wanted to see what he was up to?
I wanted to see what he was up to.
What's he doing these days? He played third base most of the time, right?
Niekro,
am I wrong?
Was he an outfielder? No, I could be
wrong. No. He was an infielder. I thought he played
third base, but then moved to first base.
Moved to first base? Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
I feel like he was Brandon Belt a little before Brandon Belt was, I want to say.
A little bit, yeah.
So he's only 33 years old right now, but He did sign with the Houston Astros in 2008 to a minor league contract, but he wasn't. It didn't go so well. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
He retired in 2008 in May, and he got a job with a telecommunications company. But later that year in December, he decided to make a comeback as a knuckleballer.
What?
Just like,
are you kidding me?
No,
the Phil Niekro knuckleball.
I'm dead serious.
That's awesome.
He always knew it was genetic.
He was actually signed by the Braves to a minor league contract, and he pitched one season in their system, and he appeared in 14 games in the Gulf Coast League in 2009.
Wow.
Before he became a free agent at the end of the year. But in 2010, he did retire again, and he became an assistant coach at Florida Southern.
You know, if you're going to learn the knuckleball from anybody, you learn it from Phil Niekro. You know what I mean?
Can't argue that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Learning from the best. I've also got on the same birthday as Lance Niekro, very much on the other side of the success with the Giants spectrum, we've got Willie's favorite, Jason Schmidt.
Oh, yeah. Love that guy. He never pitched a no-hitter, did he?
No, he did not.
Man, and we always thought it was going to happen for sure at some point.
It's like the A's. The Giants got rid of him at the right time.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. He was unbelievable when he was on the Giants for about 2 years there. It was ridiculous when he'd take the mound. I mean, it was like you knew he was going to have 13 strikeouts. You know, you just knew that was going to happen.
No, I thought he was going to absolutely throw a no-hitter. I thought the Giants should sign him to a 10-year contract. I mean, I honestly thought he was, you know, the next coming. But
yeah, I loved his big boxy face, too. He had the most boxy face of anybody ever.
He did. Yeah. Very boxy face.
Yeah. with that little chin beard going on as well. It was amazing.
And let's see, we've also got on the 7th, we have Eliezer Alfonso and Brad Hennessy.
Oh, Eliezer.
Brad Hennessy.
Brad Hennessy had an amazing first half one time.
Yes, he did.
For a little bit, and then sort of fell off there, off the wagon.
Yeah.
Spectacularly. And of course, star pitcher Jim Barr from back in the day had a streak once of, I think it was 41 batters retired in a row, like the last 21 Mets in a game, and then in his next start, the first 20 Cardinals in a game.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Jim Barr was something else. And of course, on the 4th, we have to celebrate the birthday of one stellar outfielder, Johnny Velvet.
Johnny Velvet, everybody. Johnny Velvet, that's right.
Smooth, baby.
That's right. Johnny Velvet will sex your eye holes with his amazing plays in the outfield. And we'll also sex the post-game reporter. Just because.
We're going to have to take the clean tag off of this episode, guys.
What? Sex is not a bad word. He's just going to sex you, that's all.
No. That's it's S-E-C-T-S, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
He's just going to create religious organizations.
He's going to create religious organizations. Yeah, Johnny Velvet, one of the most amazing post-game interviews you will ever have. And the fans hate him, except for the team that he currently plays for. All right, cool. Birthdays for everybody. And let's quickly talk about Tim Lincecum before we talk about some other stuff here. Fan Fest is most importantly. But Tim Lincecum has stated, and we mentioned this earlier, that he is eating less In-N-Out burgers. Is this bad or good? While he was, the man a couple years ago, winning two Cy Youngs in a row, did we hear about the In-N-Out burgers, or was that the year after? I feel like that was mostly the year after.
It was the year after.
More so the year after, I feel like.
I can't believe he got up to 197. That's what he said. He got up to 197 pounds.
I just don't believe that because I'm 195 right now, and I know I'm a lot thicker than him.
And I weigh 182 right now, right? And Tim looks tiny to me. I saw him at FanFest.
Yeah.
And he looks so scrawny. I mean, I guess he says he's down to 175 right now, but I never saw him looking like he was 197. 197.
Did anyone last year ever say, God damn, Tim's been gaining weight? I mean, I never heard that anywhere. I didn't think that.
I think we all assumed it was hair.
Yeah. No, I never once looked at him and thought, man, he's really packing him on. I mean, he's just never, you know, he looks exactly like my old roommate, by the way, which is freaky to me because I watch him every day, you know, or every fifth day. And I just think, there's my old roommate, Mike, chilling on the mound, striking people out. It's so weird. And, you know, I know that doesn't make sense to anybody, but if you knew Mike, it would be hilarious to you. And it is hilarious to me consistently, because Mike was like the most chill, laid back dude ever, just like kicked it and smoked weed and played guitar all day. and then struck out, you know, 15 that night.
That's it. Right. No bad.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think this is a good move for Timmy. Don't get fat, dude. Your game is being a skinny guy and having your crazy pitching motion. It's not being a big fat guy. Don't let your body change. You know what I mean?
Hypothetically, you know, the physics could dictate that if he had a little bit more mass around his waist, he could transfer some of that potential energy and a kinetic energy into the ball. But yeah, no, go ahead and just stay at your 170.
If you're trying to imply that he's magically going to turn into CC Sabathia, I don't think that's how it's going to work.
No, I love the comparisons to Roy Oswalt. You know what I mean? Because it's so true. Like, Roy Oswalt is that little guy who has found a way to stay a consistently good pitcher for a really long time. And I remember the whole thing where people were like, what happened to Timmy? And then Roy was like, well, you got to keep that worth ethic going. Like, that's the most important thing. When you're this size and you're trying to pitch in the major leagues, you have to work harder than everybody else. And Timmy decided to start doing the long toss again and all that stuff. And suddenly his strength came back into his arm. And, you know, I think he should embrace the fact that he's a little guy who does amazing things. And yeah, don't start eating too many double
can
doubles.
Can we sign Oswalt and send Zito to the bullpen?
Let's do it. I'm in.
Yeah. Dude, how many? We'll be like the Warriors. We'll be all little guys.
Yeah. Is Oswalt is still with the Phillies, right?
He's a free agent right now.
Are you serious?
I think they're looking. A lot of people are looking at signing him to a 1 or 2 year contract after the injury.
He's still a year, man. He's still
Oswalt on a 1 year contract is a bargain.
Although I do want to thank the Phillies for putting him in there in the extra innings or whatever it was, or ninth inning of
that
game
did
four.
Help. That did help.
Thank you for that, because we won that game, and it was amazing. All right, let's talk about FanFest. Chad, you were there, and I was there as well. That was on my birthday, which I share with Johnny Velvet. so we actually, on that day, showed up and started day drinking really early because, you know, it was my birthday. But the parts I remember were fantastic. It was amazing. Oh. 36,000 people was the last numbers that I heard that were there.
That was the official count.
Okay. It felt like it was very crowded, but it did not feel overly crowded. It didn't feel like I couldn't go do anything. I didn't stand in line for anything, though. Did you guys stand in line for anything?
No, I went with my 6-year-old daughter, and I thought it would be fun. She's a huge Giants fan, all because of my brainwashing, obviously. We were all brainwashed.
That's appropriate.
You're raising her right. That's what you're doing.
It's normal. It's okay. But
you're doing it right.
I was actually, I was like, I'll hook up with Dills here up at FanFest. And we waited in this long line. It was about an hour and a half. And I wrote this in the blog. I have to admit, I was really disappointed in a small percentage of Giants fans. But I know that this microcosm of behavior is going to exist within every fan base of every team in, you know, the world, honestly. But we waited in an orderly fashion. It went all the way from AT&T Park across Lefty O'Dual Bridge down the pathway to the Willie McCovey statue, and then out into parking lot A. We were a half a mile from the frickin' park.
Wow.
We got there about an hour and a half before the gates open. And the line built behind us as far as the eye could see. I mean, probably, you know, twice as far as what we were waiting.
Well,
when the gates actually opened, we got in, well, as we were crossing Lefty O'Dual Bridge, if you guys are familiar with that entry, they shut down that right lane for traffic on the bridge itself. So the people who waited in line are on the pedestrian pathway going to the park. Well, because they shut down that right lane, all of these people who magically showed up right when FanFest was starting decided to just kind of walk across the bridge where cars would normally drive. There's no one there to regulate them. And they just kind of merged into the entire line of people that had been waiting there for an hour, two, or three. And the problem is that if you had one or two people that were cutting, you could take care of that. And we did earlier as we were coming in. And I'll spare you those stories. But as you're coming into the park itself, you have literally hundreds of people merging in that just got there. And, wow. You know, people were screaming, yelling obscenities, the whole thing.
And you're there with your six-year-old daughter.
Yeah. And yeah, so I'm covering her ears. And people, I'd say half of those mergers, if you will, were flipping the bird and yelling back, like, what are you going to do? The other half were pretending like they didn't know, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to walk in here with my child. There's nothing wrong here. Anyway, I just had to say that because
that
I was
frustrating as hell.
I was
very
disappointed with some of the Giants fans because they were all wearing Giants gear, and I really was disappointed. But anyway, when we got in,
what they needed to do though was moderate the line. They needed some people just stationed here and there,
just like
to
staff.
Kind of,
yeah,
and it's hard because, like I said, the line was like a half mile, mile long. So it's like, how many people can you employ to do that? I understand that they're not going to regulate all that, but it was just frustrating.
Close to the park.
Yeah, that's true. An honor system point of view, I was fairly disappointed. But the good thing is that I'm not an autograph whore. So once we got in, we were kind of at the tail end. I know, Willie, apparently you got there a little bit later.
Yeah, we didn't get there until about like 11 or so because we were struggling to get up that morning. We ended up going to a bar after my party.
Night before?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that. I drove home, which was probably a mistake, by the way. Anyway, we'll gloss over that. But the reason I got there so early was not because my anal retentiveness, but it was that last year was 40,000 people. And they said that the people who got there at 10 o'clock were waiting a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Before they could get in. So I was like, well, crap, I don't want to not get in. So we got there early, but they did change the concourse. They put the autographs out on the field. So I guess it was actually a much better flow this year, which was good.
Yeah, it was.
So we got in, went down to the field right away, walked around. The autograph lines immediately were 2 hours long. That was the report. We didn't want to stand in any line. And as I wrote in the blog, it was actually a good thing because I casually walked up to a couple of the autograph booths just to see who was there. And there were a couple of good booths, but there was one booth in particular I remembered. It was on the third concourse level where people were lined up down those ramps, you know, that go left, right, zigzag all the way down to the first floor. It was about a 2 hour wait. And when I went up to the top and just kind of walked right up to the booth to take a picture, it was... It was Roberto Kelly and Dan Runsler.
Awesome. People wait 2 hours and they're like, oh, hey, Roberto Kelly and Dan Runsler. Awesome.
Yeah. Congrats on getting married, buddy.
Yeah. You have to get lucky with those things because I walked by a couple where I didn't get in a single one, but I kept, you know, checking to see who it was. I walked by Buster Posey's. I walked by Tim Lincecum. I walked by Brandon Belt. I walked by all of these. And I was like, the people who are at the front right now, because they rotate them in like for like 10 minutes or whatever.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So the people who got lucky, but most people did not get lucky. And they, you know, what's fine. It's fine. I mean, that's how the system works. And that's what it is.
I kind of got to go knowing.
Yeah. I want to go again, maybe, you know, not to be rude to my daughter, but next time without my daughter, because I really wanted to soak in the Giants atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I wanted to listen to the KNBR interviews. I wanted to go out and take pictures. I wanted to mingle with the crowd. I wanted to talk to people. But, you know, unfortunately, it was a little difficult with a six-year-old daughter who, yes, she is a Giants fan, but she's a six-year-old.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She wanted to go to the batting cages. She wanted to get food. She
slide
wanted
down the slide, maybe. Yeah. Do that
I'm
kind
bored,
of stuff.
I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored, I'm bored. So, you know, maybe next time.
You can't blame her. I mean, you know, FanFest is
not at all
fun for that. But I mean, that's like that's one of the reasons that I always talk about the fact that, like, when I was a little kid, my mom would take me to games. I would bring a book because it just wasn't – my brain couldn't process how baseball worked when I was, like, that little.
Yeah. And, you know, like, my experience was totally different than yours because we showed up at, like, 11. We stopped and got a sandwich. And then we went in. We just immediately went to the KNBR spot, sat down, ate food. And I went and bought a beer, and the lady gave me a free one because it was my birthday. So I was double fisting like right away. And and by the time it was like 2 o'clock, I think we had had maybe like four beers each. a couple of shots of Patron. Like, you know, we were back on it again after the night before. We had a great time, though. I mean, we took pictures with the trophy. We walked around. We got on the field. Tried to, you know, fake it like I was making a catch at the wall. Took picture in front of the mound. Did all that kind of, you know, we just were kind of floating around doing whatever the hell we wanted to do. And it was a blast. I mean, I just love being in that atmosphere with all the Giants fans hanging out. And listening to the KNBR stuff was definitely some of the highlight of my experience there, because we got everybody. I mean, we got Tim Lincecum, we got Buster Posey, we got Aubrey Huff, we got all those guys coming up. And it was kind of hard to hear. This is the one thing that I wish that they would improve on is give us a better level with the sound in the stadium. I know it sounds good on the radio, but it was tough to hear when you're actually there at the stadium. But once we got upstairs, we actually went and chilled upstairs for a little while. There was the question and answer area. And we hung out there for a little while, and that was actually really cool because you could actually ask questions.
Nice.
And that was a lot of fun. So I would say my FanFest experience was fantastic. But, again, too many people. They need to figure out a way to staff that thing correctly to handle the amount of people that come. Because I don't know. Unless the Giants really start to suck again, it's going to stay this way. People are kind of into baseball right now around this city.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, they normally had 20,000 people a year before 2 years ago when they got 40, and then this year they had 36. They expected 25 to 30, so obviously they overshot that.
They didn't know what they were going to get, for sure.
One thing I do have to say, and I know this ties into the letters from the listeners, but my daughter was very hungry. Whenever we go to movies or shopping at the mall or a Giants game, she wants food right away. And she's a very skinny little girl who doesn't eat very well at home. But whenever we get in these situations, she likes, you know, salty food for whatever reason, sweet food. Yeah, she's a kid.
Like a six-year-old.
Exactly. You know, M&Ms fuel her life. So we went in, we got some chicken and fries. We sat down. I was like, honey, I want to listen to this KNBR interview. So we sat down. And within 2 minutes, Tim Lincecum came out with his hood, which was kind of funny. It was like, why you got to get the whole hood up thing? You know, it's like your whole persona. But right after he was done with his interview.
It was that or a Red Bull cap. I'm just saying. Yeah. So,
exactly. He's got to have a sponsor. But after that, this gentleman came up to us and he said, hey, I kind of noticed you from afar. Would you mind if I took a picture of you and your daughter for my baseball blog? I was like, I will admit, I was a little kind of worried at first, you know, but I'm like, well, okay, you know.
Okay, random guy with a camera,
yeah,
no big deal.
It's a free event, whatever, but I'm like, all right, picture, whatever. So he sat down and he started to talk to me and he said he writes for his own baseball blog, just like we're doing this podcast for the Giants, very similar effort, but his was kind of a more of a general baseball blog. Looked like he was in his, you know, 60s or so, and he proceeded to talk about his experience growing up. His father was a New York Giants fan, and, you know, his father saw a lot of games at the Polo Grounds. He was a little too young to watch a game there. He was about 5 or 6, I guess, when the Giants moved to San Francisco. But after the Mets started playing at the Polo Grounds, he said his dad would not take him to the Polo Grounds to watch a game because that was very sacrilege. And as a child, he didn't quite understand that. But as a Giants fan, I could understand that. And I kind of wrote in the blog there that it'd be, you know, if the San Francisco Giants were, you know, let's say they moved to Tampa or whatever, like they were going to before.
And then suddenly some other team started playing
in AT&T Park. It would be very difficult for me to take my child to that said hallowed grounds of where the Giants played. So anyway, he interviewed me and we talked a little bit, and he basically travels around the country interviewing people, writing for this baseball blog. It was really interesting because that's something I would love to do.
That sounds amazing.
I mean, absolutely fantastic. So
he sent us an email, right?
Exactly. He wrote us up the interview with me and my daughter in his blog, which is called The Grubby Glove. And just last day or two, he posted actually a couple of comments on our blog, but he sent us an email a day or two ago. He actually caught up. He's listened to all 18 episodes of Torture Cast, and he loves it.
Awesome.
So it is absolutely fantastic. It was just one of those touchstone moments that it was really amazing to be a part of. So I just wanted to mention Michael. He's out there, and thank you very much for interviewing us and posting about us. It was a great opportunity.
Yeah, we linked to it on our site as well, and I think we should actually just throw up a general link to the Grubby Glove, because that's a really cool thing. Keep that going, and give him a little bit extra pub as well. And it's I really love the fact that there are people doing the type of things that we're doing. The Giants Pod and this guy doing his Grubby Glove stuff, and there's a lot of them out there. McCovey Chronicles and some of these kind of get picked up and start getting a little bit more exposure. So I think it's really cool that there's people. It's like outside of the general media, and giving their take on things. So that's really cool that happened, and glad you're listening to the show, Michael. Welcome.
Yeah, Michael,
I know you're a
really
Mets fan, but hey, it's all right.
we're still really proud to have vicariously met you through chat.
Exactly. So let's we're kind of getting towards the end of the episode here. So let's get to some of the other segments that we do. Fan Fest, we'll be there next year, right? I mean, come on, we're going every year.
Oh, I'll go again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might not take my daughter.
All right.
But
that, okay. Well, next year maybe me and you will get day drunk together, Chad, and we'll we'll experience it that way.
I would enjoy that a little bit more. Yeah.
So let's talk about our favorite guys here. New favorite guy, Chad. I know you you watched a little bit of the AT&T Pro-Am, and you got a favorite guy from that, huh?
Yeah, I went last year, and I really wish I had gone this year. I just didn't have the time to do it. But Mike Kruko always wears the old 19-teens, 20s, whatever, pantaloons, if you will, for golf. So he was sporting them again at the AT&T Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. Oh, they're fantastic. And he has no shame in wearing them. And Matt Cain didn't quite have the knickers, where they come all the way up to the calves, but his pants were a diamond patchwork of black, orange, and white.
Yeah, well, those are actually sold in the dugout store, I believe. Those particular pants, yeah.
They were very striking.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. And we actually had a guy at an MGA tournament, the Mediocre Golf Association, Rob Christie, wore those a couple years ago to the Douchebag Invitational.
Okay, I will have to get those
Yeah. Bag
invitational, because I will wear those. That is fantastic.
You know what I thought was funny was that Jim Harbaugh looked like he was coaching a football game.
Everybody comment about that. He wore his black pants, his sweatshirt, and his Niners cap.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like exactly dressed up for a game.
He literally looked like he was about to coach a game.
Well, the next question is, was he talking to his caddy over a headset?
What was funny is every time he talked about something, he covered his face with a play sheet. So I love the picture of Matt Cain and Will Clark, and Matt Cain's teeing off, and he's got this grimace on his face like, oh, man, that's gone. And Will Clark is looking like, dude, what did you just do? Like, it's just fantastic. This is the great thing about golf is that no matter how good of an athlete you are, golf is hard. Golf is hard for everybody, even the best players in the world. Golf is a hard game.
Well, Will Clark, I listened to an interview with him on KNBR this week, and he actually didn't start playing golf until after he retired from baseball. He had never swung a club in his life. And the one reason he said is because I loved my swing in baseball. And of course, a lot of people can attest to the beauty, the natural beauty of his swing. He didn't want to screw his baseball swing up with a golf swing.
Yeah.
But after he retired, he said, whatever, now's the time. So here's a guy who retired about, I guess he's about my age right now. I'm 38. That's about when he retired. And that's when he started picking up golf. So I guess I have a little bit of room for improvement.
Yeah, exactly. There's no bad age to take up golf. I'll say that. If anybody out there doesn't know, I'm a huge golf fanatic. I started a organization that's now worldwide where we have golf tournaments for mediocre players. And so I'm a golf aficionado, I would say. But I didn't start playing until I was about 24, 25. I didn't get good at it until I was 70. So I've got a little time.
Very good.
Yeah, no, it's never going to happen. But there's golf is amazing. Golf is so fun. And if you've never played, if you think, oh, golf is boring, you got to go play. You got to go play, and then you'll figure it out. Let's see. Who else do we got here? Ben, you got a new favorite guy?
Yeah, I'm actually – there hasn't been a ton of Giants news this last week, which maybe just as well, especially as we get closer to spring training. So I'm going to go with Sergio Romo. I mean, on the one hand, you got to love Romo because he's always down to chat with his fans on Twitter, which I really have to respect. I mean, Romo will respond to people tweeting at him. He'll pop up with these random like, hey, I just took a photo of a bunch of us, you know, going out clubbing at Matrix or whatever. And, you know, in his I'm much shorter than the rest of these guys douchey attire. And I appreciate a guy who can connect with the fans like that, because there's a lot of baseball players that will sort of, you know, that don't want to follow that Logan Morris and Brandon McCarthy school of tweeting, where they're like, no, I'm just going to kind of say whatever comes to mind and connect with people. Like, that's one of the things I like most about the A's right now is Brandon McCarthy, because he on Twitter, he's awesome. So I recommend following him, Romo, and Lomo, if you don't already.
I watched Romo's interview at FanFest, and it was so funny because he came out and I was like, he looks like he's like a high school kid wearing Giants gear. The kids you see all the time on the bus, just all decked out in Giants gear, he looks like that. And yet then he goes out and like blows people away.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other reason that I like him is because his slider basically makes John Williams orchestral movements whenever it breaks left. It's this sort of majestic, like,
it's unbelievable.
It swings to the left, and it's just, it's themes from Star Wars the whole way.
It's unbelievable. I'm going to say that my new favorite guy is an old favorite guy, but he's another favorite again, Brian Wilson. I'm so excited to see him back on the mound. Apparently, he's been chilling on the couch for months, and the doctor's orders were to not do anything and let his arm heal, because he obviously had some elbow stuff last season, and
overuse.
Yeah, and so he's also hinted at the possibility of a new pitch, which,
because he's had so much time to work on that while sitting.
Yeah,
on the couch.
Exactly. He just sat on the couch thinking about it for like 4 months. He was like, "All right, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna hold it like this." But you know, he brought the two seamer in last season, and
Double breaking ball of doom.
Some could argue that it wasn't as effective as his old school four seamer, but I really enjoy watching this guy progress as a pitcher, and I think we're going to see him pick up a new pitch like kind of every year. And imagine a closer who has like six different looks he can give you. You know, you just don't see that, and that would be awesome if we got Brian Wilson with. You know, he's just, yeah, like, let's start throwing a forkball. Why not? Let's start throwing a knuckleball. Let's just do it all. Let's just, you never know what he's going to throw. I just can't wait to see the guy back on the mound because I miss him. I miss him so much. All right. Let's go on to, let's hate on some people. Chad, I'll let you start.
Okay, episode 18. I hate to take the same guy twice. I can't help
Sometimes
it.
Sometimes you got to do it.
I hate him so much. Eli Manning. Okay, yeah, I chose him last episode, but I hate the guy. There's even a Facebook. Granted, there's not a lot of likes for it, but
37 of them to be exact.
Yeah. Yeah. 37 nationally. Not so much, but so I'm one of 37 people who hate Eli Manning on Facebook. I think he has a golden horseshoe up his bloop. Mm-hmm. I just think he is so unbelievably lucky. He is a very whining self. Now, I wouldn't even say self-deprecating. It's a media deprecating persona.
You guys never take me seriously. I'm a really good quarterback.
I mean, granted,
guys, I won a Super Bowl or whatever. Just
I'm
going to
go
off.
Ahead and like the page because, you know, I agree. I'm
guys,
on board.
Guys, don't put me in the lockers again.
I'm on board. I hate Eli Manning, too.
Yeah, yeah. You
Let's
know,
hate this
if
guy.
If he was a 49er and they won the Super Bowl, I would have to take it, but I can't. I just whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, let's move on.
I'm in. I'm going to hate on Peyton Manning. No. I say no. Don't sign Peyton Manning, 49ers. Just don't do it, okay? Because he's friggin' injured. He's like got like basically an injury that somebody could breathe on him wrong and it could come back. And that would just be the stupidest thing ever.
Or he could breathe wrong. I mean, it's a neck injury.
Let's take a team that's on the rise and let's shake things up in a way that just doesn't make sense, you know? Like Alex Smith, sure, he's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but we don't need the greatest quarterback in the world. We need to continue to build our team the way we're doing now, God damn it, don't do it. Just please don't do it. All right. I will boo Peyton Manning every single game if we bring him in. I'm not into it. All right, Ben.
All right. Well, if you guys are going to go for Eli Manning and Peyton Manning, I am going to go with not Manning.
Not Manning.
Not Manning. Because what we saw last year was every time we talked about a lack of effort, that we would see guys getting lackadaisical, Aaron Rowan not changing his swing, Miguel Tejada being stubborn, Timmy not doing his long toss, Aubrey Huff not doing his work in the offseason. This is where we start developing holes on this team. And so I'm going to be the only one of us that actually talks about the Giants,
sure,
the San Francisco Giants, in his Hate This Guy. But we got to have guys that are all going to be working together towards a common goal, that are all going to be working. We got to have guys that aren't going to be like slacking off and resting on laurels, and you know, that they need to face up to the part of the reason that last year didn't work out. Yeah, part of it was a spate of injuries, but you know, there were a couple of times where it was kind of like, really, really, guys, get it together.
Yeah,
you
know? No, and I agree.
So I got to go with not Manning.
Manning the hell up. Yeah.
We need this team to man the hell up next year.
Let's do it. All right. Chad, why are we going to win it all?
The Brett Saberhagen effect.
Okay.
All right.
We're going to scrape our knuckles a bunch of times? Is that what you're saying?
I am reaching here.
Okay.
I know not any time in Major League Baseball history has a team won every other year for about a 10-year period for, you know, what is that, about 5 championships. But I believe that's what the Giants are going to do. They won in 2010. They went to the World Series in 2002. Their previous World Series was 1954. You have this even year thing going here. So it's just like the Brett Saberhagen effect. He was odd year, so they're breaking it up a little bit. They're going to go even year. So, yes, that's why they're going to win it all this year.
All right. Willie Mays wills it to be so. That's why we're going to win it all. He's getting old. He's been getting old for a long time now. And even though we won in 2010, I think Willie Mays, let's just do it for Willie. You know what I mean? I think that should be the mantra. Willie Mays deserves to watch this team become a mini dynasty you know, be the team that – he should have been on a couple of World Series wins. You know, he got pretty much screwed out of it by McCovey deciding not to hit that ball a couple feet higher. And, you know, he was just a clutch player his whole career, and he stayed a part of this franchise forever. And, God, I love Willie Mays. So can we just win another World Series for Willie Mays? Because who knows how many more years he's going to be able to watch this team.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Ben, what about you?
All right. So, after last week, I've decided that until the season starts, I'm just going to come up with completely ridiculous reasons why we'll win it all. So
I love
you
it.
You guys know that I like the Tigers, which, yes, I'm not ashamed of.
Sure.
Since they're not in our division, and we aren't even going to play them for another, 2 years. So you know who else has Tigers? LSU has Tigers. Indonesia also has Tigers, but that's not important right now. So LSU has Tigers, and there are, in fact, now 2 LSU Tigers on our team. That's Ryan Terrio and Mike Fontenot. So I think that the Terrio-Fontenot combination is going to prove to be deadly, simply because I like Tigers. Now then, what this means is that at some point during the season, Aubrey Huff is going to over-Pilates himself into a hernia, Brandon Belt is going to get jerked around because that's all that they know how to do, and Brett Pill is going to fade into obscurity because that's also all we know how to do to people.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is, in a fit of pique, we're going to rehire Derek Lee, who's going to have an Aubrey Huff-esque sudden resurgence in the middle of the season, and we're going to trade for Mark DeRosa. And with that done, the 2008 infield of the Chicago Cubs is going to collectively spit in the face of the Windy City by finally bringing home a World Series.
Wow.
Nice.
Okay. I love it. I think that all makes a lot of sense.
I
think
like
you
that.
Just Sherlock Holmes the situation right there.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, so that's going to do it for episode 19 of the TortureCast. I want to tell everybody to remember, follow us on Twitter. We are at TortureCast. You can also follow each of us individually at ChadK21, at Fried Duck, or at Willie Dills, or it should be at Willie Dills. Follow all three of us. And email us at mail@torturecast.com. You can also go to torturecast.com, which is our blog, and we'll be posting a lot of stuff there, hopefully getting a little more activity going as the season progresses. And, of course, you can also find us on podomatic.com, which is where we host our stuff. So go check it out there. And like us on Facebook. Do all those things. Just do it all. Become a big fan. You know what I mean? I think it's best that way. And we're gonna take off now, and we'll be back next week with episode number 20, which is a mini milestone, I'd say. So we'll see you next time. Thanks again for listening to the Torture Cast.
Send us pictures of tigers from Indonesia.
Boom! A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.